Welcome to the Intersection Hub podcast. I'm your host, Kimberly McKenzie, and I am so glad that you are here. Thank you for making this a priority in your day. Let's get right into it. Today, I am thrilled to invite Renee Crisco into conversation. We talk about the importance of taking time for yourself and how doing so serves your family, your job, and your community. Renee has a passion for people and creating connections. After serving Y2Y as communications manager for 4 years, Renee moved into the role of donor relations manager, then director of donor relations, where her strong communication skills will enable her to forge important relationships with Yellowstone to Yukon supporters. Prior to Y2Y, Renee worked with academics and company leaders to develop communication strategies and communication relation programs. Born and raised in Alberta, and as a skier, hiker, and cyclist, the Yellowstone to Yukon region is both her home and her playground. Renee looks forward to using her talents in support of the Y2Y vision. And in today's episode, she shares the benefits of her sabbatical and how she carries forward her own self-care practices while she's diving back into work with a new perspective. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Renee, I am so excited to have you here in conversation. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. This is amazing.
This is a little different for us because we get to actually talk. We should disclose right off the top that we're working together. I'm working with you as your coach. And so the fact that our conversation is not confidential is kind of fun. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. Where do we go?
Where will it go?
But the reason I wanted to bring you in, though, is because you have such an interesting story. And before we dig into that, can you tell me a little bit about Yellowstone to Yukon, or Y2Y, and the work that happens there?
Yeah, I mean, Yellowstone to Yukon is a nonprofit organization, and we literally work on the landscape from the Yellowstone ecosystem, which is like from the Grand Tetons all the way up the chain of the Rocky Mountains to the Yukon. And this amazing space is one of the most intact, and I would say arguably wildest, mountain region in the entire world. It is one of a kind. It is incredibly special, and very few people know about it. And the fact that it's like intact, which basically means nature can function as it always has been, as it needs to. It has the same animals here today as it did when Europeans first arrived, which is phenomenal. We are in a place where we are losing biodiversity, but here we are actually, you know, bringing back caribou, for example, from the brink of extinction in places. We're bringing back grizzly bears. We are restoring landscapes, we're restoring wildlife corridors that allow animals to move in between protected areas. And our mission is really to connect and protect this habitat and this space, both for the benefit of people and nature. And so we have been working on this. It'll be our 30th anniversary this coming December. And I mean, we've increased the amount of protected areas by 80% in that time alone. Those wildlife crossing structures that you see through Banff National Park, when we first started, you know, those concepts were actually the derivative of many of our pioneers. And now there's 117 on the landscape, and many more currently in construction. So those are just a couple of examples of some of the impacts that the organization has had. And right now we're, you know, when we're looking at tackling things like climate change, using nature as a way of addressing that pretty significant challenge that we have across the world is one of the key strategies. And so Y2Y, both as an organization and as a model for how to get things done, is seen as a model for the rest of the world. It's really exciting to be working in a way that that nature needs and at this scale across many jurisdictions. So,
okay, so I'm tempted to talk about pine beetles, but because I was in Jasper National Park last summer and the forest is brown, but we don't need to talk about pine beetles unless it's a really quick answer to that. But the other thing, I don't know if I've ever disclosed to you, but I was raised in Cranbrook, British Columbia. I honeymooned through Mount Assiniboine and Yoho National Park. My son works at Jasper Park Lodge. My heart is in the mountains. And so when you talk about how pristine and rugged and wild and fragile the entire Rocky Mountain Range is, it really, really resonates with me because it feels like home. I'm going to cry. Anyway.
I know. It's so true. Like, it really does touch your heart. And that's why I got involved, because I was working as a guide in Europe, as a bike tour guide. And I rode the Alps and the Pyrenees. And when I was sort of like looking to transition, there was a position that came out with Yellowstone Yukon, and I had never heard of it, read their website. And they talked about the once intact mountain ecosystems. And the Pyrenees and the Alps were listed, and the Himalayas were listed as them. And I literally went out for a run from my home in Canmore, Alberta, after reading that. And what did I encounter? But a grizzly bear, a few hundred yards away. And obviously I stepped back, had my bear stare, I was all prepared, but I was like, oh my gosh, like, we could lose this if we're not careful.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's the same thing.
Okay. So we connect there. but that's not really what we're here to talk about. what I found, you know, this season, we're talking about, again, as a reminder to our listeners, we're talking about trust-based philanthropy. We're talking about anti-racist work in organizations. And we're also talking to people who work in organizations that are creating healthy, mental and physically healthy cultures for their staff. And one of the things that really struck me with Y2Y was that there's a sabbatical policy in place.
Yeah.
So can you tell me a little bit about that sabbatical policy?
Yes. I mean, this all started to kind of come down in 2019. I believe actually there was a sabbatical policy in our HR manual for many years that clearly none of us had read the policy. And the president, Jody Hilty, saw this, brought it up. You know, people who work in conservation, people work in nonprofits obviously don't get paid in a monetary basis as others do in, let's say, the for-profit industry. It's really a heart, it's a passion. Mm-hmm. To a certain degree, it's a calling. And I know many of my colleagues that work for Yellowstone Yukon are incredibly passionate about this work. And so the idea of the sabbatical, and it's hard work, like, it's really hard work. People put in hours. And there's this feeling of this is really, we are doing this work because if we don't, we could lose something that's really precious. Mm-hmm. And it's not just precious, like it's a piece of jewelry or something. It's like, it's the air we breathe, the water we drink. It comes down to the basics of life. And so as a way of providing an outlet for renewal, this sabbatical was presented to the board and they accepted it. It's basically 3 months. It's a paid sabbatical, and the entire intention is for you to go away and enjoy life for 3 months. Not think about work. You don't have to do a research project or read a special book to help you with your career. It is purely about renewal and restoration, and how you choose to use that time. And it could be 3 collective months altogether. You could spread it out, but it's a 12-week option to rest.
And you don't have to have a baby. You don't have to use your vacation days, do you?
No, you still get all your vacation days.
And you said, you know, a beautiful four-letter word, paid.
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 At your full salary.
Yeah.
Are they crazy? Like, who is the crazy person? Just operationally, how do you do? Like,
you know, we are a science-based organization, so of course the president went back and looked at all the literature, and it all comes back as being a positive for the organization as a whole. You have people who come back refreshed, renewed. I mean, we've been off the hamster wheel. We've been off the treadmill and can take a breath. And so we go, it, you know, from my experience being on it, it takes a good 3 weeks to kind of come down off that frenziness, and just be able to be for a while. And then when you come back, I felt a lot more in flow, less stress, less reactive. I was able to think much clearer. It was very, very, very helpful.
We'll get back to the to your experience with your sabbatical in a second. And you know, I'm a big fan of napping. I just woke up from a nap 20 minutes. So I get that. And while I was eating my lunch today, I was listening to an interview on Canada's public radio that was from a woman who was talking about rest and napping as an act of social justice, which I thought was really interesting. And the idea that we need to be really intentional around combating this grind culture, which is what you're talking about, which is
The hustle.
The hustle, the what the sabbatical provides an opportunity to do. And you also mentioned 3 weeks isn't enough. We all know it takes time. First of all, if you can manage to take 2 whole weeks off, it takes a whole week to just decompress. And then it takes another week to just gear yourself back up. So there's like maybe a day or two of real rest in there. So And the idea that the sabbatical policy actually is good for business is fascinating. So,
yeah, and I really commend our board for supporting it and our leadership for making it happen. And of course, you know, like I said, this sort of was announced in 2019. One of my colleagues was the first one to take it, and hers got cut slightly short because COVID hit.
Okay.
I was the second one in place, and then mine got delayed.
Okay.
So as a result, you know, there is 2 years or so there where people, and part of the policy is you have to have worked for the organization for 7 years or more, which I think is really important. It is also about saying thank you to loyalty for being part of the organization. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so there was a number of people who in that 2 years had actually met their 7 year requirement. And so there was a bit of a backlog, and the organization could have easily said, no, we're going to make a limit. And it's not a guarantee that everybody gets it. There is the option that someone could not get their sabbatical, or that it could be delayed, or, you know, there is room for flexibility so that it's good for the team, the organization, et cetera. And obviously the bottom line. But they felt really strongly, especially in the face of COVID and all the impacts that had on mental health, that this was still an important thing to try and honor as best as possible. And in some ways, it was a really great exercise because two things happened. Number one, it meant that you had to, as an organization, make sure that your team was set up so that if you were hit by a bus, whether it's sabbatical or not, your team could continue on and not be completely put off trajectory.
That in and of itself is so smart to have some organizational memory built in across the team is brilliant.
It does have a very significant impact. And it also helped, you know, on the other side of things, it helped us to clarify what are things that we really need to do and what are stuff that we're doing that we could actually just get rid of. It's a little bit like, you know, spring cleaning.
Yeah.
So that's been really, you know, those two things alone have been super helpful and effective.
Okay. Wonderful example for other organizations to consider implementing a sabbatical policy. Let's move forward a little bit to you actually taking a sabbatical. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, I mean, well, the lead up to the sabbatical was, it's always interesting. It's like when you go away on a vacation and you're trying to tie up loose ends and make sure you have proper communication and make sure all the things that you need people to do are in the right place. So there was certainly a lot of preparation that had to take place, but also like a vacation, you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, I think it was like midnight before I was taking my sabbatical that I was able to turn off my computer literally for 3 months straight. So I was like, that's fine. I wanted my team to be set up. It was really important.
So did you actually turn off your computer and not check your email for 3 months straight?
No, did not check it at all. In fact,
yes, you turned it off. Yes, you did not check it.
I did not check my email. I did not turn on my computer in that time. In fact, leadership has said to the rest of the staff, do not send anyone on sabbatical an email. They're being told not to look at their email, even when they get back. Wow. If it's that important, it'll come up, or save it, you know, for when they do return, so that because like any organization, we have a pretty heavy email culture here.
Yeah.
It's also a great way of being mindful about the emails you send.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. So you didn't check your email. You worked your little butt off to get to your sabbatical, and then what?
I went away. We got in the truck and we went to Kelowna, spent time with family. And so for the first month we were here in Canada. And then for the last 2 months, we went to Europe as a family. Mm. And my in-laws joined us for 2.5 weeks. We spent a lot of time on the coast in France. So we were on the Mediterranean in a town called Cassis. And as I mentioned, I lived and worked in Europe quite a bit. And one of the places that I worked in was in Provence. So I took my family there and showed them some old stomping grounds. And then the stars somehow aligned. And I think there was about 11 of my former colleagues from the bike tour company that I used to work at called Trek Travel. We managed to align our calendars, and all of us, including our partners and children, rented this amazing manor house right on the water in Brittany. And we spent 7 days all together playing and exploring. And we selected that place because none of us had ever worked or really been there. So we were all exploring it together for the very first time. And it was so beautiful to be with people. I mean, if you've ever known people who have guided, I mean, they literally live, work, eat, sleep 24/7 together. So it's a very special bond. And, you know, like we would all get up in the morning, we'd all make our separate breakfast, somebody would organize that day's activity, we'd go off for a little cycle or a beach time, or, you know, explore this cultural piece. There was always a crew of people who were on like dinner duty, we'd all come back, someone would have beverages and snacks for 4 o'clock social hour. And, you know, the rest of the crew was cooking dinner. We'd feed the kids, they'd go to bed, and then we'd sit at this long table from about 7 till 10:30, eating and drinking and laughing and telling jokes. And then we would retire to the living room where there was like this big, amazing fireplace, and we just carry on for the night. And then we do it all over the next day. It was amazing.
Sounds like heaven.
Absolutely amazing.
I have, many years ago, I participated in a few communal mm-hmm. vacations like that, but they were only 3 days at a farmhouse. But I totally get it. And you are a kindred spirit. Since this isn't a travel blog or podcast, rather, so there you are in living in what sounds like heaven for 3 months. And I guess we don't need to talk about, it sounds like stepping away was pretty simple and easy for you. What was it like to step back? Or am I wrong? Was it not that hard to step away?
No, it was really easy. I think it was really, I think the other, because after my time with my colleagues, my family and I, we drove down the coast, down, you know, kind of in the surfing community. And then we went back across the country and landed in a small town called Collioure. And within a 6-block radius, you had everything from hiking, cycling, water, parks, castles, coffee shops. So it was, I think that environment helped to, it was a really good juxtaposition against the hustle and timelines of everyday work life.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was away, I was really able to breathe, to enjoy my food, mm-hmm. to enjoy my cup of coffee in the morning, to spend real quality time with my family, like be in awe of the light off the water, mm-hmm. hear the jazz artists playing in the background. You know, it was just like really kept being in the moment.
Yeah.
And then coming back.
Yeah. Okay, wait, before you do that, there's a thing that happens that what you just described, I mean, that's how I live every day, honestly, now. Not anymore, but because I'm not part of the hustle anymore, because I have control of my own schedule, because I can build in a nap, because I'm control of my own calendar and how much work I do. I notice the value of creating that space for ourselves, the value of the pause, and how much we lose when that isn't part of our day-to-day life.
Well, what you're talking about is you're able to create that culture, that value, and you can cultivate it. And what is, and I'm really conscious of the fact that even when I was working in Europe, I was still, you know, crafting holidays. So it's kind of still holiday Europe. But the cultural value of those moments
mm-hmm.
of taking time
mm-hmm.
is very different than here. I mean, we really value the hustle
mm-hmm.
in this. So to try and bring that experience and hold it in this context
mm-hmm.
in North America is an intentional
practice.
Effort. It's a practice. It is a practice.
Yeah.
And it's not easy, but it's worth it.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so that sounds like heaven in a jar. I don't know what that means, heaven in a jar. I don't know. You weren't in a jar. I don't know what that means. But it does sound like heaven. What was it like to go back?
I mean, part of me didn't want to come back.
I know. I wanted to lying awake at night thinking, how do I not go back? How do I not go back? How do I not go back? Yeah.
Oh yeah. There was many a times where we were like, okay, how can we get back here and live here? Yes. And I think for me, what I was most nervous about, and I had reflected upon this when I was on sabbatical, and that was, I knew I had, I'm very clear on my boundaries. Holding to boundaries can be hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if you have a child and they're like constantly poking at you, eventually you have to either stay really, really strong or you crack. And it's the same thing in the hustle culture of North America, in that, you know, people ask and ask and ask and ask and try and wear you down, and eventually you crumble. And so for me, my fear was, can I bring back all of who I am from sabbatical and hold on to those boundaries so that I keep this person? Because I was turning into somebody I didn't like pre-sabbatical
mm-hmm.
and did not want to go back to that human
mm-hmm.
and knew that I had acquired skills, practices, and mindset that I needed to incorporate. And so I needed to find trust in myself to do those things.
Trust in yourself. Okay, a couple of things there. You were turning into somebody who you didn't like, and then you're on sabbatical and you were concerned about how to keep the you that you liked, the sabbatical you, in that work environment and what that would look like. And then you had to help everybody else understand that you were going to walk through the world and the space in a new and different way.
Well, hopefully I didn't have to tell them. Hopefully I could just show them.
Are you showing them?
Yeah. I mean, I think when I first came back, you know, my boss had said, I really like this new Renee. I was kind of like, this is actually Renee.
This is the Renee.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, I pre-sabbatical, I was definitely on that hamster wheel more than I wanted to be, and knew I wanted to get off, just couldn't figure out where the exit ramp was.
So you wrote a letter.
Yeah. So I went on sabbatical in July of 2022. So January of 2022, you know, you're in fundraising. Like
I was.
Usually January. Sorry?
I was.
Yeah, you were in fundraising. So in January of 2022, it's usually like you kind of take a look back. You're adjusting your plans for looking forward. And it just went off the rails. Like there was this, we just got hammered with projects, initiatives. There was this idea that COVID was kind of almost over, that people were getting back out there. There was more travel, there was more events. All of those things take a considerable amount of time. In order to get ready for them, we had all of these communications pieces that needed to be written. We were just embarking upon our 7-year strategic plan and a reorganization. I mean, it was chaos. And so in that, there was conversations around what we should do and what we shouldn't do. All of this was happening personally at a really challenging time. You know, we were still working at home. My husband's a first responder. So his stress levels were high just as a result of, you know, COVID and everything and just normal work. But he was also physically in a lot of pain. We found out just prior to January that he needed a double hip replacement. And that was not going to be happening for potentially 6 years' time. So that, you know, the question of private or not private, do you wait 6 years? Well, he was like in full pain. And we ended up making the decision to go private. That was going to happen in May. And that meant that he could not get sick for 2 months prior to that. So with that personal home life situation, and this idea on a work-life situation where everybody's trying to get out there, there was a conflict. There was a major tension. It was quite stressful. And we were engaging in efforts and perhaps some things that personally I was like, I'm not sure that this is the right time. It's going to take a lot of energy and I don't think we're going to get what we really need to get out of it. And there might be negative consequences.
I'm sorry if I wasn't listening very well. This was when, right after when you came back from sabbatical, right?
No, this was pre-sabbatical. Before.
Okay. I just lost that context for a second. Okay.
Yeah. All pre-sabbatical. I had set boundaries. I said, I don't think we should do this. It's going to take too much time. Long story short, the conversation went to, what do we need to have in place in order to get it done? So we talked about that. They provided the resources, but COVID made even those resources hard. You know, like I had contractors helping out with a couple of different things. For one event, we didn't even have a caterer confirmed up until like 10 days before the event, because caterers were like, they'd confirm and then they would pull out. It was just so stressful, you know, working 14-hour days. And some of COVID, I think what COVID did for a lot of people is that it just magnified some of the issues that were already there. And that would definitely be true. You know, we have, like in any organization, we had some structural issues, we had some prioritizing issues. Anyway, it was the perfect storm. Mm-hmm. The consequence for me personally, and this is when I was like, I'm done, a couple trips to the hospital for heart palpitations, daily anxiety attacks, you know, it was, and I can take a lot. So when I started to feel that and to experience that, I knew something had to change. Mm-hmm. I sought out resources. Our organization is great for providing, you know, professional help, professional development. And some of this is leadership training, for example. And so I worked with someone at an organization that we collaborate with and talked about the things that I needed to be successful. But more importantly, some of the things that I contributed personally to the situation, like, mm-hmm. you know, in the sense of like, I'm not the victim. I have been in places in other work situations where I probably say yes too much, or I get too excited and my plate becomes too full.
Right.
So what can I take ownership of?
Right.
So I got clear about me. I got clear about structurally what needed to be in place and clear about some of the other elements that I needed support with. I also talked even with my own, you know, counselor, therapist, whatever, and about why my pieces are that way, and created some paths forward as a result. Mm-hmm. And in both of those conversations, they said, why don't you just quit?
Mm-hmm.
And
we've had that.
We've had, why didn't you just quit? Like, well, that's the easiest thing to do. And I said, well, two things. I've been working at this organization for a really long time. I deeply believe in the mission.
Uh-huh.
And I deeply respect my colleagues.
And you love the work. Yeah. You love the work.
I do. I love the work. And you know what? They're human too.
Right.
They're human too. They're trying to do the best that they can. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that anybody else should suffer, but I at least need to, respect the context of the situation and my colleagues, and be honest with them and give them, really be honest about that to them.
Yeah.
And so I articulated all of these things on a 6-page letter. I called a meeting with our president, my direct superior or boss, and our HR person, all of whom I have really lovely relationships with. And I felt wholeheartedly that they would come to that meeting with open ears and an open heart. And that at the end of the day, they had my best interest as well as the organization's best interest at heart. So I shared this letter with them, which also included, you know, the negative consequences, you know, physically, mentally, et cetera. And I think they were taken aback. There was some time for processing. They were happy that I shared this with them and was really clear on what I needed. And obviously there was going to be follow-up conversations as a result of that to try and execute on some of those things. And, you know, jump ahead, 10 months later, mm-hmm. And post sabbatical.
Yeah,
obviously, like that was a big
12 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a big piece of it, just to have that space.
Wait, Renee, how did they respond? You sat down, you had this meeting. Were you expecting, like, you expected, mm-hmm. you had best intentions and positive expectations from the conversation? You weren't full of fear and dread walking into that?
I believed in my heart that it would go well. And I knew that some of the things I was asking for were significant asks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You were stretching them. You were giving them an opportunity to stretch.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. I also deeply felt that it wasn't just for my benefit, but also for the organization's benefit. Great. It just was going to probably put us out of our comfort zone.
Yeah. Okay. So what'd they say? How'd they respond?
Like I said, they were very accepting. They were very gracious. They were really happy that I shared this information and that I was super vulnerable. We had a number of follow-up conversations individually in which, one of them said, I'm really glad that you shared this with us because I feel like you've helped us to not enable us any further to do some of the things that are probably not serving any of us.
Mm-hmm.
And they put, actually, I think most, if not all of the requests in action. You know, we're hiring some key positions as a result. We're having deeper conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say like, it's not like it's something that changes overnight,
mm-hmm.
but there was a shift. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, it is significantly better. And I think the other big thing too, as I said, is I am also making a really active effort to hold myself accountable for the things that I am responsible for.
Right. So what are some of your strategies? Well, okay, let's wrap up that piece. They were grateful that you asserted yourself on behalf of yourself, not just for you, but for the entire organization, because they weren't modeling who they wanted the organization to be or creating the culture that they wanted to have. I mean, the whole sabbatical policy was in place for a reason, but it sounds like there was a grind culture in an organization that has a super progressive sabbatical policy. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a grind culture for a couple of reasons. You have a whole bunch of people who are incredibly capable, you know, many of whom I would argue are like sort of that,
yeah,
for lack of a type A kind of people, very results driven.
Yeah.
And they're working on something that can tackle two of our biggest issues in the world, biodiversity loss and climate change.
Yeah.
You know, when you're seeing catastrophe happening in your daily news and you know some of the pieces that could help tackle that and you are part of that, there's like this huge intrinsic motivation to really work towards it. And so you put in the extra hours.
Okay. So where do we go from here? You've submitted the letter, you've disappeared onto sabbatical.
And the bomb. Bye.
Bye. I'm going to France now.
Yeah.
And then you come back and have to get back into that with this refreshed perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the first things that pops into mind is I had a really great walk and talk with my direct supervisor. We are very different people, which of course means that can work super, super well. It can also not work super well. Mm-hmm. And so our walk and talk was, for me, I think for her too, but for me for sure, like just one of my favorite moments working for the organization, because we connected in a really deep way. And it was an extension of that conversation pre-sabbatical. It was kind of a place of understanding the intention behind an action that might be different from what that person would normally do. So while I'm very I'm very frank and open, and I like conversation. You know, another person, this person is perhaps more reserved, would be the best term. So that can sometimes create a certain level of tension if it's not understood.
Right. It's yes. Instead of, Adam Grant talks about this. He talks about tension against each other, or standing together to deal with tension over here, you know? Yeah. Yeah. So you went walk and talk to deal with.
We had this problem. Yeah, we had this, I mean, and it was just like a, how's it going? What was it like? Blah, blah, blah. You know, it was really a connecting. And of course, whenever you walk in nature, I think it also helps. But we had, through that conversation, we developed some really beautiful clarity. And so, for example, you know, I am like, I'm a real forward thinker. You know, I can see a vision. I'm like, this is where we need to go. And I'm probably more optimistic than your average everyday person. And whereas, you know, my superior, she's a lot more detail oriented. So she might ask a series of questions.
Right.
That in some situations, I might feel like they're barriers. You're taking this idea down, like,
yeah,
versus what on, and then on the other side, I could also see those as, this is a great question to ask. Let's figure out how to get around that barrier.
Right.
And so we kind of realized that in her and asking those questions, it's not meant to take down an idea. That's just her processing.
Yeah.
And so we just basically gained clarity about where we were both at, and it was positive and it was supportive. Mm-hmm. And now as we move forward, it has provided a language, mm-hmm, for us to gain clarity and we avoid tension as a result. It's great.
So you're talking about a couple of different things here. You're talking about how the management team organizationally can protect their staff, and your letter was the impetus for them to start to think differently around those things. And then in addition to that, this relationship where you have a colleague who is very different from you in terms of needing just to stop and think and be more analytical, and you're like, let's jump, it's a good idea, yeah, just trust me. Wait a second. Do we have the money? What's the risk? What's the downside?
Yeah, which is all really good.
Oh, really? Together, imagine what you could do.
But exactly.
In so many organizations and working relationships, people often don't step back and go, okay, how can we both lead from our strengths to tackle this issue?
Well, and absolutely. And I think at the end of the day, it can be the difference between building a trust-based relationship,
right,
and a non-trust-based relationship.
Yeah.
And that's because you don't believe the intention of the other person.
Right.
You think, you know, it can feel like they're trying to take you down, right, rather than,
yeah,
support you in a different way.
Yeah.
It, because we all have our biases. We all have, right, our, you know, and so that was really powerful and gained clarity and, you know, a tremendous amount of trust.
I wonder, just to circle back, I wonder if the sabbatical helped you find the capacity to lean into that relationship in that way.
I think it actually probably helped both of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, I am not an academic, but I really like academics, yes, apparently, because I keep on working with them. Yeah. And I like that analytical thinking, and I like their, like, I do really like that.
Yeah.
And so I do appreciate those questions, because I do think it can advance you. But there were moments where, you know, in academia, part of academia is taking somebody down, or at least that's the way it feels. It, you know, like there's a difference between giving somebody positive critique and being criticized. And so sometimes it had that element of being criticized versus, and so I think for me, what the sabbatical did, it gave, it potentially, like, the letter gave fodder for consideration, and the sabbatical gave time for processing, which is important to my colleague. And it also gave my nervous system time to calm down.
Which
and that was a really big piece for me, because I was like vibrating. I was so stressed.
The physical stress of that, of all of those things. So as you're now back for a while now, what other things are you doing for yourself to make sure that you can hang on to that space?
Well, I'm working with you.
Thank you very much.
It is true, though. Like, I mean, that is a really important part. Having somebody to share. No, it's like they're not even challenges, but it's more about just sharing ideas, concepts, situations, and by getting it out there with someone who is able to ask really great questions, the next step forward comes a lot faster.
And while easily. I really appreciate, and I'm really going to have to invite more clients onto this podcast for sure. I really appreciate that you pointed that out. And one of the things when you are working with a coach, which is very different than working with a therapist, is the beautiful thing about it is that's one way to create the space, right? Yeah. Like to block out a couple of hours a month to just noodle things over and dig into them and come out the other side. So that's one thing. Great. I appreciate that.
And it's also, just to build on that, it's also really important because it is myself investing in me.
Right.
And whether that be with you or any, like, it is, there is a physical, monetary and intention behind that action that is prioritizing myself.
Right.
And I think that's hard in today's society. We talk all about, you know, self-help and self-love and all this kind of stuff, but what does that really mean? And for me, that's a piece of it. Another one is, and it gets back to the same thing, is a morning routine, which for someone who's more of a night hawk is really challenging, to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, do something physical for myself. You know, I have been noodling with a meditation practice for the last couple of years, but now I really enjoy it, even if it's only 10 or 15 minutes, but just to sit there in the morning, it's pretty awesome. And the other big one is, and I remember giving this presentation to the staff because they were like, okay, share a little bit about your sabbatical and what you learned. And I said, this is going to sound really bad, but the number one thing I learned is not to care so much. And what that means is, for me, was putting other people before my own well-being.
Right.
Putting work, people, whether, and that could even be my child, my husband, whatever. And just recognizing how important it is to put yourself in a position where you can be your best self, and how important that really is, and taking responsibility for your own energy.
And I know that that doesn't mean that you're putting your daughter and your work and your husband second, third, and fourth. I know that, you know, for me, what I like to ask the question, will this matter 5 years from now? And if you're heart palpitations, and you're constantly wound and your physical well-being is at risk, it matters. Stepping away and prioritizing yourself matters. But if you've got this nice equilibrium going on, then you do have the capacity to let other things take the priority once in a while, as long as you know how to keep that equilibrium and do that work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So if we were to end this conversation right now, what do you think would be left unsaid?
I think, as a, maybe not as an unsaid, but as a recap, finding clarity for what a person needs, being brave enough to share that, and even braver to hold to it, and knowing and seeing the humanity and the people around you. I think we often think of, you know, bosses or leaders as these, you know, super people. And in the end, they're just people. And they too have lives and children and families and are going through all sorts of different things. And they're not really any different from you. And chances are they're trying to do their best too. And sometimes their best isn't quite what everybody needs. And so to give both yourself and them a little bit of grace. And I think in doing so, often you can get a lot further. Mm-hmm. Just don't care so much.
You care. I know you care. You have such a healthy perspective on it. That's the thing. I'm so grateful to know you, and I'm so grateful actually to our mutual friend Tony Myers for introducing us.
Yes, Tony.
Tony. Shout out to Tony. Hey, Tony. thank you so much. Thank you so much for, you know, I really appreciate the way that you always dig deeper and think and dig and think and dig and think and dig and think. And and I love knowing you, and I so much appreciate working with you and you publicly coming out here on the podcast to share some of this stuff. I think people will learn a lot from your example. So thank you, Renee.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me, and for hopefully, you know, everybody will have 3 months sabbaticals. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Let's start a movement.
I think that we could all benefit from napping and sabbaticals.
Totally.
Renee, thank you so much for joining us in conversation. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you, listener, for joining us too. And remember, please like, review, and share this podcast. Let's keep welcoming more people into the conversation. See you next time.